I'd like to welcome to the studio this week's author of the week,
Alex C. Tillander.
And we're lucky enough to have him here in the studio to answer a few questions.
Flew in from Antarctica.
It was quite a hardship for him, yeah. Can you tell our readers a little bit about how you first got interested in writing and what made you want to become a writer?
Well, I mainly started with reading, as I think probably all writers started that way, with lots of reading. I basically, up until like the age of 12, I didn't read much at all. And then a teacher of mine in high school got me on to a specific author, Willard Price, his name is. And then I just started reading a lot from there. And I think it was when I started reading Stephen King, and mainly reading books where he had the main character was a writer, that it really got me interested in writing, I think, just the whole process of how, what the writer did in writing and how he got into it. And I think just with like the stories that King came up with got me interested in thinking, you know, maybe I could spin something like that, come up with some cool story.
Cool. Yeah. Was there a specific King book you remember in particular being
influential?
Influential. Thank you.
Not really. I mean, The Dark Path made a big impression.
That was a good one about a writer. I personally liked It quite a bit. That was another good writer.
Too long, though, I
think. Too long, okay. Fair enough, yeah. It was like 600 pages per letter, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and next, I know readers are always interested in knowing how writers do what they do, and it would be great if you could just magically, you know, push a button, or if you had a computer program that would give you, you know, the nice turns of phrase and all that thing. But unfortunately, we don't have that yet, so we actually have to create.
I don't think I'd like that.
No, that might suck, yeah. But so can you tell our readers a little bit about how you write? Do you have a schedule? Do you write every day? What kind of discipline do you...
Ideally, if I was doing this full-time, I would have this perfect schedule, you know, like all successful writers have, where I'd write at certain times of the day and enjoy the other parts. But because I'm full-time employed in retail, I have a very weird schedule that I never know when I'm going to be working.
And yeah.
So the best I can do is I have to, the days I get off is are my big writing time. That's the time I feel the guilt kick in where, like, I'm not doing anything today, so today's the time I should be writing.
Yeah.
But it really varies with how, what I'm working on. If it's something I'm really interested in, I, you know, even if I've had a tough day at work and I'm tired, all of a sudden I'll want to write and be able to write that evening, regardless of how tired I am.
Okay, that's great. So you say that guilt plays a big role, pretty much. Yeah, okay.
Plus, when I don't write at all, I start to get weird.
Okay.
I start to feel there's something missing in my life. I'm not doing something right, and it is. It's because I'm not writing.
So anyway, you mentioned in that last answer, you were talking about a novel that you're working on right now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I hadn't asked you about this before, but I was wondering if you'd like to talk a little bit about what you are working on.
Yeah, it's called Nothing is an Accident. And it started accidentally, funnily enough. Basically, I mean, the little I'd read, well, I've read quite a bit of Dean Koontz, not lately, because he's really gone downhill.
I would agree with that.
But four or five books ago, I read a lot of him. And I was just always impressed with how he really wouldn't have too much background. You just start, his stories would just start with the guy and just go from there. And
that's
wouldn't really look back much. And I was really impressed with how, like, wow, he's just going with this. And,
a lot of momentum.
Yeah, just going with it.
Right.
And so I wanted to try a story like that. So I thought, I just started out. And it starts out with a guy who basically wakes up in a room, doesn't remember anything about himself or who he is or anything like that. And then it kind of goes from there. Turns out he's in a house. But then it turns out this house is actually part of his, basically a facility, sort of a lab almost. Like he's like a guinea pig type thing. And turns out there's this agency behind it all that is like training him for something.
Okay.
But they're able to control like mind wiping and stuff like that and giving him amnesia, so that's why he doesn't remember who he is or anything like that. But that way they can control him better. And
sounds like it touches on a theme that you find keeps returning to your writing to some degree, the which you've mentioned before. You were talking about strangers in strange lands, or, you know, people coming into situations where they find that they're not exactly at home. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, it's kind of freaky, actually, because when I got that question, I hadn't really... I mean, I thought of it a bit before, but actually then I decided to take all my writing apart and actually just see it was all there, which was kind of freaky, where because, I mean, I was born in Spain and raised there for 18 years, and then I came over here for college.
Right.
By a weird accident where I got terrible grades in school. And so college and university and
it was punishment
in England wasn't an option, basically, because nowhere would take me. And so, like,
sort of kind of like Australia.
Well, my second plan, I've always wanted to come here. And all you need is a high school diploma and some decent grades. And plus, they love international students.
They do,
especially from such far reaches as Spain, you know?
Right.
So I started with that. And so I've never really felt at home anywhere, I don't think. My mom's British, my dad's Swedish, so, and basically Spain was a vacation spot for them, so that's why they moved there. And it's just like nowhere I've really ever called home per se. Though I would call California my home now just because I've been here so long.
Right.
But yeah, just having moved all around a lot, I think alienation would be the verb I would choose.
Good verb.
And just like, you know, I guess that shows up a lot in my writing and the different novels I've done where the characters never feel they necessarily belong where they are and want to be somewhere else. In this case, they don't know where they are, but they definitely feel lost and are trying to find that. So maybe one day I'll write the book that will have the answer and be like, oh, so that's where I'm from and that's what I'm all about.
Now I don't have to write anymore. Now I don't.
But it also kind of ties in with, I had a professor in college, Brian Allen Lane, who, he basically said that, you know, there are three questions writers are always trying to answer. They usually fit into one of these groups, which is where are we from? Where are we now in the present? And where are we going?
Okay.
So, you know, a lot of sci-fi writers will do the where are we going thing, looking for the future. And I've always been very interested in history and specifically medieval history. And then anything before 1500 is what I like, basically. And
right.
So and I've always been interested in anthropology and looking back and clearly there you can see that I'm wanting to try to answer where do we come from.
Right, right.
And the best reason I can come up for me liking the medieval period, even though I'm not a fan of religion so much and there's so much religion in it, is I think that after the fall of Rome, you know, Western society pretty much collapsed and they had to redo it.
Yeah.
Do the whole thing all over again. So they had to reinvent it. And because we have more evidence from that period than we do, you know, pre-8000 BC or whatever, that way we can find out more. And like, yeah, the history books, I mean, I pick up anything if it's like to do with anthropology, you know, Jared Diamond's one of my favorite authors, Guns, Germs, and Steel is a book the entire world should read, and that way they'd know why we're so screwed up right now.
You've already got one more person having read it. I just finished it. It's an excellent book, I agree. If you haven't read Guns, Germs, and Steel.
The grain seeds and stuff like that gets a little slow, but overall you get to understand why the world is a lot the way it is.
Yeah, yeah. It's like it's fiber for every reader, I think, you know.
Yeah, any books that kind of touch on our history, and especially up-to-date ones, because, I mean, we're changing our ideas all the time with new evidence that comes out.
Right.
I'm trying to remember, what's the one I mentioned in the written interview?
Mm-hmm.
The Invisible Sex. But they were totally, like, with new evidence, changing the ideas of how, you know, you sex have your image and, of the, you know, the caveman who goes out and gets the food while the women stay at home, and new evidence has kind of shown that that's totally not the case, that the women were just as involved as the men. Stuff like two guys attacking a woolly mammoth probably never happened unless he was attacking the cave, because it's a giant creature that would have killed everyone. So what was more likely happening was they were attacking smaller creatures like wolves and pigs and things like that, and they were doing it as a group and using nets and things like that instead of spears, and just like it really enlightening us to how it probably was more accurately.
Right, right. Okay. And you mentioned also some science fiction there. Do you have any favorite science fiction authors or anything you'd like to talk about as far as?
Ray Bradbury I have read. And
he's great.
He's just not even just as a sci-fi writer. He's just one of the best writers of our time, I think. And just in a story, he's able to do so much.
Right.
Actually, one of my favorite sci-fi novels, I haven't reread it recently, but it's called Coyote by Alan Steele.
Okay.
It came out a while ago and I got like a free copy, so I decided to read it. And it was a great, just like your classic sci-fi where you go to a civilization that, you know, wants to colonize, and so they go many, many thousands of light years away and colonize this other planet. But they go through the steps, like back on Earth, they end up as a rebel group that actually steals the ship that's supposed to colonize it. And so then they cover, you know, spending the thousands of light years crossing their in stasis tubes, except for one guy whose stasis tube breaks.
Yeah.
And so they go into the story of how he's on his own in the ship, no one else around him for, you know, the rest of his life, and how he's like goes crazy.
Right.
And then they cover the whole, you know, settling the planet and things like that.
Maybe you could tell us about the story that is appearing on the website this week and how that came about.
Wow. Well, I think wrote it in 98, I'm going to say.
Okay.
It used to be all really organized and put fancy copyright dates on everything just so I know when, but I don't know if I still have that one, but I'm pretty sure it was 98.
Right.
I don't remember much else about it, just that I wanted to do a story maybe about, you know, to do with the death character and
sure.
change it up a little.
Right.
And it was actually, that was nine. Actually, it was 98 because that was the El Nino year, and that's why El Nino showed up. And yeah. I was in at San Jose State that year. And
What are aspects of, what's something that when you're reading a writer that just makes you stop and say, wow, that was good.
Is there honestly, anything particular? And I've talked about this with my wife because she's also a big reader and a writer. Uh-huh. And just, she's much more on character and I'm much more the plot story guy.
Plot, okay,
looks
right.
for that more. And so it's right. definitely, I think, description and a turn of phrase.
Right.
Chabon is pretty masterful of this.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And his use of how, when he uses metaphors and similes and how
yes,
he'll continue the simile on, you know, through the paragraph and actually make it tie into the story somehow, which
right,
doesn't
right.
sound forced and is just, you know, brilliant. And
right.
I kind of hate him for that.
Yeah, he's just wonderful with all his metaphors and language just jumps off the page at you.
Yeah, I've never been sure if it's actually, if how much he works at it.
Cause yeah.
Irving just like, you know, plans everything out first and then writes the hell out of it for 3 years until he's got it as perfect as, you know, any painting. And
but, yes,
whereas I wonder
right.
if Chabon, just because he is so good, how much work he puts into it.
Right.
How much he gets, you know, right straight away and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. There is a different, you know, slightly different focus between someone like John Irving, who is also a great stylistic writer,
mm-hmm.
but
oh, definitely, yeah.
probably there's a little bit more of a focus on the plotting and things in John Irving as compared
and also the
to
characters
yeah.
are just
you're probably always going to come back to some degree to character being important to story, because if you don't care about the characters and it's hard to care about what's happening to them. But you mentioned Chabon. Is there any one else recently that you've read that you think is a great writer that people should go out and
yeah,
read?
I should pull up my website to see what I read recently.
Okay.
I
why don't you talk a little bit about
every week.
Also talk about how you review books and where where people can
I put all my reviews on my website too.
Okay.
LXCTalander.com.
Is it LXC Talander? Because I went there and they said it was pronounced.
They did. Did they?
Yeah. They did. Yeah.
It's well, that didn't
web,
tell me.
It's that web 2.0 thing that they.
But anyway, yeah, to repeat, LXCTalander.com.
Hey, once you get it,
if you're not sure of this, just check out my name on this website at ad.com.
Which we will spell correctly.
And I've basically been putting up like book reviews there. I've linked to my blog, which I don't update so much anymore because I'm working on this website. I do this thing. I basically update it every 2 weeks now, and I try to do a thing that I call stream of consciousness.
Okay.
Yeah, all which right. I just a little thing, probably 500 to 1,000 words tops, and it's like just something I felt like writing. You know, I'll just do it spur of the moment and
right.
just be
right.
interested in to see what will come out. And you sure. never know, I'll have a whole ton of these, and maybe one day I'll look back and
cool.
make
cool.
a book out of it. So. But then I also do book reviews for bookloons.com.
Okay. And what's that, in case our readers aren't familiar?
It's just a nice, big, fancy website that does, mm-hmm. I think they've got like hundreds, at least thousands of book reviews now, like 8,000 book reviews. And they actually have a really big readership, too, I discovered.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, there's about 5 to 10 of us that do reviews. And yeah, we just...
Cool.
It's
all
a
right.
pretty neat site, yeah.
All right, so check that out. That's bookloons.com, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. No hyphenations?
No,
or
nothing, just straight there, yeah.
Periods,
I
might
have thought it might be in a .net, but no, it's definitely .com.
.com, okay. The real one?
Unlike this one.
Not we used to be .com, but it was Late Late Show the Late Late Show magazine.com or something like that. It was really unwieldy, and people, you know, got tired of when I would tell them. So then I found latelateshow.net. It was much more to the point. You do some book reviewing, you do a little bit of a lot of novel writing, a little bit of short story writing, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, I used to do a lot more, and now
right.
my because I'm working on just some much bigger projects, I find I have less short stories ideas, I guess, because my ideas are just so much bigger.
Right.
I did write one last year. I don't do too many anymore, but yeah.
Like, okay.
When the idea gets me, I'll do a short story.
Right. Now, you also mentioned working on multiple projects at the same time. Is that something that you're comfortable doing, or do you have like a critical point at which
yeah,
you can't sustain?
I actually wondered for a while what
yeah.
other writers do, and just wondering
right.
if, you know, you're, because they put so much emphasis on, you know, finishing that novel, do you just work on that one novel then?
Mm-hmm.
But I found out that, again, to cite Stephen King, they don't do that. Lots of people have multiple novels and different things going on at the same time. I think Irving, again, he does a lot of screenplay work as well, so he has
that's right.
different things going on at the same time. And I think that way, otherwise, you can definitely get burned out on something and
right.
or get stuck at it and, you know, want to leave it for a while and then come back to it.
Right.
So yeah, another thing I'm working on right now, which is still trying to get up and going, is a graphic novel series all to do with the Battle of Hastings.
Ah, very cool.
And it basically just opens with the battle about to start, and then we'll go back and find out all the history of the characters and what leads up to it. And then, I mean, I just basically wanted to do a story, the graphic novel series of the Bay of Tapestry, basically. And
mm-hmm.
it basically, at the end of it, it just cuts off. And so even though Henry's dead, you're not really sure what might have happened after that. They think probably they showed the coronation of William and stuff like that. But
yes.
So I thought I wanted to do a comic book series just to show that ending, maybe.
Cool.
Unfortunately, at the moment, I'm trying to work with the artist to get some stuff going. I mean, got the script for like the first issue, but we're just trying to go from there.
Okay.
It's hard when we're both working full time in different jobs.
Do you have any interest in writing nonfiction? I know you write some.
I'm trying to know if I put it up on my website. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm planning to do a page of basically future projects I have planned at some point in the future. Mm-hmm. And the problem with nonfiction is it's gonna take, you know, 3 to 5 times as much time as doing fiction, because
right.
you need to do so much research and planning. Yeah. But yeah, I've actually got some nonfiction books planned. I've always kind of wanted to do a story on to do with the East India Tea Company, the whole setup in that part of the world there. Just on the whole, I don't know how much there is out there available.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
The whole style, you know, how England was controlling it, and they had this specific line of ships that were just doing the tea, going back and forth from India and stuff like that.
Right.
And then I've also got back in my head now, too, as a complete history of pirates I want to do.
Ah.
But yes. not just like, you know, a specific time, but going way back to, you know. But yeah, my plan one day is to do a complete history of pirates from going from ancient Egypt on through to the present, where there are still a lot of pirates today.
Cool, cool.
Not wearing the same clothes, but more machine guns and speedboats.
Right, right.
More and efficient, one might say.
Yeah.
But it's probably going to be really long, too.
Yeah.
I'll probably have to split it into two editions in paperback. But then I've also got this other novel called Weird, W-Y-R-D, for those.
That's weird.
It's Old English for fate.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. But it's set in the 6th century, and I basically worked on that a bit. When was that? 2003. Got a chunk of it done. And then I left my characters basically on the British shore waiting for the Saxons to arrive. And they've been there for a while now waiting to come. And they're in my head standing there just saying, where are we going to go next?
No,
and they've been there
so
for...
So you mentioned guilt being a driving force. For,
they've been there for a few years now. And my plan is to get back to it this fall.
And
take them to the next step. Well, they just kidnapped the Anglo-Saxon. It's Hengist's daughter.
Okay.
Rowena, yeah, they just kidnapped her. So the Saxons are coming back because, you know, they cooked the daughter. And so they need to go somewhere. And I'm hoping to plan to get back to that this fall.
Okay.
Problem is, research kind of caught up there, and I needed to make sure I got things right. I'm going to work in Stonehenge in that in some way.
Ah, very nice.
I don't know much about that, so that's why I need to read my plan is to read Edward Rutherford's Sauron.
Sauron.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're Angles, Jutes, and Saxons, a whole big group of them, but they'd arrived and they met on this island, and then they kidnapped the daughter and skipped away in the night, and then they found in the morning that the Saxons have also left, but they're basically going back for reinforcements.
Okay, all right.
But again, this is another novel that, again, ties in with my
theme
that I can't get rid of, which is that you've got our main character who, maybe Arthur, I'm not sure yet whether to make him that or not. Who's been going around through Europe and then settles in England for a while with a friend, and you've got the Saxons invading England because they want new land to settle on, and trying to understand why they want to settle there, what's so important there, why they keep settling there, and why, you know, the British feel so much patriotism and nationalism to this country, and he's trying to understand that and get behind it because he's never felt like he's belonged.
All right.
And I apparently have a big issue with that. I don't know why, but I do.
That's the great part and frustrating part about writing, I'm sure, is that, yeah, you get a...
Hopefully now I want to start thinking about it when I'm writing, and then it will become weird and
drawn out. Yeah, and you can blame me for asking that question. Yeah. He's so self-aware. He used to not be like that. Chris Gesser.
Well, yeah, I remember you brought up writer's block in that, which is kind of a dangerous thing that people don't like to talk. Writers don't like to talk about it. Mm-hmm. I don't have an issue with writer's block.
Whistling
a lot of people
by the
do
graveyard
and,
right.
and see it as like, you know, a thing that he who must not be named, it that must not be named. Yeah, writer's block. I have no issue with it. I haven't suffered from it at all. If anything, I have the opposite writer's block, I say, which mm-hmm. is the thing where if I don't write, I start to get weird and I have to write.
Right.
And I've never really had an issue with the writing. I mean, I guess the closest I get is I'm not sure what's going to happen next, and I start trying to think, that's what I've done right now. I'm in the last part of my novel, and
right.
I kind of stopped because I want to make this big ending, and trying to work out how to do it. But the key is really you shouldn't think about it at all, even though I can't stop myself from doing that.
Right.
You should
right.
just sit down and write, because that's the fun part of writing, is the characters will do what they can because they're restricted by who they are, and they'll finish it off in their way and not your way.
Right, right. Well, just to bring some cohesion to our whole conversation, from my part, you're talking about the unconscious part of writing and the conscious part of writing, that, you know, that you're aware of needing to have a big ending or something, but then also you want to just be there on the page for the characters to sort of speak their own selves into being. How do you deal with writing and rewriting with editing? Do you just do your first draft to just let it all come out and then you shape it afterward, or you want to talk about that a little
bit? That's a good question too.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people will have to edit all the way along. My wife does that as well.
Mm-hmm.
She can't just keep writing. She needs to edit as she goes.
Yeah.
Which is understandable. I'm probably, I guess Irving isn't like that, or he's
right.
like a weird extension of it. No, I just let it all come out, put everything there. I'm a big fan of that. That way you're not hindering yourself at all. But then King says you need to cut out at least a third of that, because
mm-hmm.
it's all just extra stuff. And that I've definitely done that before, where you just start being ruthless and cutting out the necessary stuff, no matter how good it is. If it's not needed in the book, you have to get rid of it.
Okay. So do you see two aspects of yourself maybe coming to do battle here in writing? Or does it feel confrontational in the sense that... that you're having to cut things that the other part of you created, and you know, part of you.
And I think that definitely was the case earlier in my career. In my writing, just because there, you know, everything I worked with, I wrote, was great.
Right.
It was
right.
Beautiful stuff.
Right.
You know, changed the world, and I couldn't get rid of it. Basically, over time, from then, it's been a learning experience of, you know, you got to cut stuff.
So, any plans for 4th of July? It's Independence Day today.
I'm not sure. It's like 100 and something outside right now.
It's
so
really, really
I'm
hot.
I'm not sure how many barbecues are being had.
Yeah, yeah.
Now that the AC is off to help with the sound.
So we've been suffering for you, the listener out there. So hope you enjoy it.
If you're on your drive, your workout.
Yes, right. Yeah, you can feel the sweat that we're feeling.
You just clocked 2 miles on your workout.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in, Alex. We really appreciate it. And I'd like to thank everyone for reading this week's story and every other story we've had recently at the Late Late Show. We are going on hiatus as of now, so Alex's story will be up on the site for quite a while. But hopefully we will come back at an undisclosed time in the future.
Maybe when it cools down a little.
When it cools down a little. Yeah,
fall.
Could be a while. And I wish you the best of luck with your writing, Alex. And thanks again for coming in, and appreciate having you at the Late Late Show.
Okay, thanks a lot. And if anyone wants to drop you a line about what you thought about the story, you can just go to my website, like alexcdelander.com, or email me at alex@alexcdelander.com.